Welcome to Steve Dale's Pet World.
You don't have a better bad idea than this?
This is the best bad idea we have, sir.
If you've got pets, he's got answers.
You are a sad, strange little man.
Steve can help. We're positive.
Oh, God, this thing is going downhill fast.
You've got America's pet expert here on Steve Dale's Pet World.
Well, good morning. It is 6:37 on WGN, which means if you haven't adjusted your clocks, you need to do that. In the studio is Mr. Paul Vallis. He is running for mayor for the city of Chicago. So, first of all, Paul Vallis, thank you very much for getting up so early, but it's not quite as early as it turned out it could have been, right?
You know,
in a way.
We picked up an hour, fortunately.
Yeah, so I asked you here on the right week as far as sleep goes. You haven't been getting much sleep, have you? Running for the mayor for the city of Chicago. And you know what? I took a Lyft here this morning, and the Lyft driver has a list of questions I need to ask you. But one of the things that she said is that, you know what? I'm glad I moved out to Naperville because I'd be concerned about living in the city of Chicago. African-American woman. So... And in fact, I was just in Clinton, Iowa, visiting the Purina pet food plant. That is outside the Quad Cities. And I'm checking into the hotel, and the woman there, you know, you show your driver's license, right, when you check into a hotel. And she saw I lived in Chicago, and she said, I used to live in Chicago. And I said, where? She told me where, on the south side of Chicago. And she said, I had to move out. I didn't feel safe. Has it become, and you've put it this way, these are your words, and I think it's just right, the Lyft driver, I used your words, knew exactly what you were talking about when I said, Paul Vallis is talking about the tale of two cities.
Well, there really is a tale of two cities. When you look at the city as a whole, the city has 50 wards, and there's only major investment going on in fewer than 10 of those wards, and substantial investment in maybe five or six. And, you know, you can just, we're right in the heart of the investment center for the city. But when you get beyond those wards, you enter a part of the city where not only has there been little to no investment, but you are entering parts of the city that have been in a deep depression for 30, 40 years. You look at the Englewood community. You look at the Rosen community, where I grew up, where I was born and raised. The city has lost 17% of its residential property values since the 2008 recession. Nationally, those property values have grown by almost 8%. When you look at the downtown area, you say, how could they possibly be? There's cranes in every direction. What that means is that there are communities that have lost 40, 50, 60, 70% of their wealth. So clearly, when you have those type of economic conditions, it leads to other problems. And as you well know, it's everybody, almost everybody in the city knows that there's been a significant exodus in population. I think
we
lead the major cities in the loss of population. I think we've lost population in the last 5 years. And in many of the poorest communities, there's been an exodus of the remaining middle-class population, and that's destabilizing the communities.
And that is where the secret sauce, so to speak, is, because as I understand it, people are actually moving downtown, our population downtown, which is great, is actually going up. People moving in from the suburbs, people moving in from other cities who can afford it. However, in the neighborhoods, what you describe is kind of scary, and it's happening statewide, and it's certainly happening around the city as well. You're here to talk about companion animals, and you and I met actually when you were running for lieutenant governor, if you recall. But we've gotten closer, if you will, when you appeared at an event that was a protest when the mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, said, "I am going to fire the best director of animal care and control the city has had in at least four decades." I mean, I haven't been around that long watching, but if several decades, not four, several decades watching, more than four people who have been executive director of that office, and she did the best job. I mean, we were in no-kill territory as a city. So there was a protest. People who care about companion animals said, this is wrong, came out I don't know how many people. I'm not good at crowds. 1,000 people or more were there. You know,
absolutely. It was a great turnout.
Yeah, and it might have been the same turnout as was at the Federal Building at an event they had to honor those shot in Pittsburgh just a couple days ago. So, I mean, this was a big turnout, is right. And you were there. You said, I don't want to give a speech. I don't want to take advantage of the fact. I don't want to make it seem like I'm taking advantage of anything. I'm just here in support of companion animals. And knowing you previously, I believed it, you know, because I know you. And you said, I'm going to come up with a plan regarding companion animals. And you and I then went out to breakfast. We talked about it. I couldn't be happier because the fact that one mayoral candidate is talking about companion animals is something that's never happened before. A serious candidate to boot has never happened before. And this is a topic, I'll let you talk about it, that you care about.
Well, as you know, when I came out to the event, I came out as to participate, but not to become the focal point. If you remember, you wanted me to speak, and I declined.
Yes.
Of course, Pat was there with his petitions.
You're talking about Pat Quinn.
That's right. Yeah. To get so obviously he had a more important role to play, particularly mobilizing the community to get his referendum on mayoral term limits, which they effectively blocked on the ballot. But I also came there to learn and came there to observe. And of course, I know Susan Russell personally, and from friends of mine who have known her for years. My former business partner went to law school with her, so I was introduced to her even before she took the director's job. But at the end, we've talked about a lot of things that need to be done to really make Chicago a truly humane city. But all those initiatives will go for naught. Excuse me. Unless you really create a structure, you put a structure in place that can really empower the advocacy community to have a role in developing and implementing and enforcing policies regarding companion animals, policies that are designed to make Chicago a humane city. And, you know, we talked about your idea, not mine. We talked about the creation of an advisory council, a permanent freestanding advisory council that you could enact via resolution or via ordinance that would have the representative groups on that council. Not that the mayor would pick who would be on the council. The community would pick
the
who would
animal
be on the
community,
council.
You mean?
The animal community. The community would pick the chair.
I mean, there have been lots of times over the past, I don't know, number of 15, 20 years where a decision has been talked about, not necessarily made, at City Hall. And the veterinarians have said, well, you're not really right about that scientifically. If you had come to the experts,
that's right,
then we could have helped. We want to help. We want things to be better. Or not necessarily veterinarians. It could be animal welfare experts like Susan Russell, people that actually work in the trenches rather than someone who may be well-meaning but not be educated enough about a specific expertise.
Well, if you create a vehicle to bring those people to the table and you give them the autonomy to determine their membership, to determine who's going to be co-chair, you give them you empower them to make a recommendation on who will be the next director or who will be recalled to be director again, the advisory group would make that recommendation. So for all practical purposes, make that decision. And then that same advisory group would weigh in on things like the development of the appropriate ordinances. Like, you know, we talked about the problems with the puppy mills and, you know, the need to close them down, things like that, and the frustrations with trying to deal with city council.
So the other thing that you did, which is wonderful, you had a listening session with members of the animal welfare community. And wouldn't you know, right now, other candidates for mayor are saying, I ought to do the same thing.
That's
so
good.
I love it. I love it. So what you heard was the founder of the Puppy Mill Project telling you that, you know what, our goal is to close down puppy mills. People get dogs and cats at pet stores. Mm-hmm. They're from puppy mills. So what cities all over the country have done, including Chicago, including Cook County as a county, have said, well, pet stores are great, but you can't sell dogs and cats.
That's right.
Or rabbits.
That's right.
At these pet stores. Well, a handful of pet stores have gotten around this by calling themselves a not-for-profit.
Right.
And you were like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. How can this be allowed?
Well, this is why if you put an organization together that has those experts, and they make recommendations, they can come in and they can explain what the situation is. They can articulate how these establishments are bypassing the process or how they're skirting the law so that they can continue to be in operation. Because let's face it, we've got a lot of challenges in the city
yes.
that need to be addressed.
I think so.
You know, so you know, when you create a mechanism that really allow people who are experts in this area, who think about these things, who are advocates in these areas, you accomplish a couple of things. First of all, you create a vehicle to empower the community. When you empower the community, you unite the community. You mobilize the community. That's always a positive thing.
Yep.
We always complain about our inability to mobilize a community around certain important issues. Well, you create vehicles to do that. The second thing you do is you build consensus. You know, so I would rather be told by the expert what the most appropriate policy should be. And I would rather have an entity out there, independent and autonomous, telling me you're correctly enforcing this law and you're ineffective in the enforcement of this other law. And I would rather have an entity tell me what we're doing right and wrong or what we need to do to correct it. So, you know, I did the same thing when I did my interfaith partnerships. I didn't designate my representative with the interfaith community. I allowed all the key religious groups to form a board to identify who they wanted to be represented from their denominations on the board, and then to pick the chair and the co-chair, and then to pick the director. So at the end of the day, we were able to mobilize those organizations and empower them simultaneously.
You know, Chicago, as you mentioned, has lots of issues going on, economic issues. You're an economist, so that's a good thing. But also other issues, the big one I believe would be public safety. And we don't have time to talk about all those things, but what we do have time to talk about when we get back, how pets tie in to all of that. Believe it or not, there is a tie-in. I also want to talk about, in fact, there's a text about this, 312-981-7200. The question is, what about lead in water? You've been talking about that, as it happens, for a very long time, so we'll get to that too. When we come back, I need to say it's 6:49. If you have any other time on your clock or on your phone, but the phone wouldn't. The phones automatically change time, right?
Thank goodness.
What was that?
I said, thank goodness.
Yeah, really, really. You're not kidding.
I never
was very good at that. So it's 6:49 on WGN. So I mentioned 312-981-7200. That's our phone and text. And I mentioned lead in the water. We had one text about that. Now we've had several. People asking, is it true, first of all? The other question that I have here is, okay, what about my kids drinking Chicago water? You've been talking about this issue for a long time.
Hold on,
let me turn on your microphone. Now we can hear you. Sorry.
I know. I had my microphone pulled earlier this week when I had a press conference on lead in the water. Anyway, to make a lot, address the issue directly, we have lead in our water, and no amount of lead is safe. So when they finally released this study that did a sampling and said 17% of these homes have elevated lead in the water, well, what does that mean? Does that mean that all the homes that they tested have lead in the water? Because no amount of lead is safe. So at the end of the day, we've got to be fully transparent, and we can't be covering up this study. We can't be covering up the fact that there's lead in the water and we need to get it out. So,
well, is that part of the problem? I hope the newsroom, I'm sure the newsroom is listening, because there are some clips here that can be used on WGN, because has that been a problem with this administration that, so it's not only police issues that are being covered up, it's lots of things.
Whether it's test scores, whether it's true crime statistics, whether it's videos that haven't been released, that they haven't been transparent on, or for that matter, the latest, the lead in the water, clearly there's been an absence of transparency. And you've got to trust the public. I mean, the public expects its government to identify real problems and then offer significant solutions. So,
what would be the solution to lead in the water? How do you replace every pipe in Chicago?
Well, very quickly, one of the things that they need to do is they need to test. And they need to test any building that's connected to the mainline pipe replacements, because when they do the mainline replacements, they shake the pipes, the connecting pipes, and those pipes are made of lead. Up until 1986, you know, lead pipe was mandatory, and what happens is the lead comes loose. So they need to do testing in a very open and transparent way. The second thing that they can do, and they can move expeditiously, is to go out and to identify filtration devices that have proven to be effective, and then to make those filtration devices available, because they really range in price from the type of things you could put on your faucet for $100 to the type of, or even cheaper, or to the type of more comprehensive filtration devices that might cost $1,000. But if the city,
how would the city pay for that?
Well, you know, I think what the city can do is the city can use developer fee monies. The city could earmark a portion of the TIF monies. The city could reprogram some of the current money that is coming from the water fees, the increase in water fees, which incidentally, those water fees are going to be going up again. So the idea here is to go out, contract with companies, and through strategic sourcing, negotiate the best prices so that those devices can be available. And there can be various levels of subsidies depending on the family's income, for example. And then, of course, you know, people could pay over time, or the city could pay over time, or if it's a poor family that can't afford a filtration device, it could be subsidized. This is not a budget buster, but it would at least buy us time to develop a longer-term comprehensive policy and program for going in and actually removing the connecting lead pipes. And on my website, if you go to valisforallchicago.com, I lay out with great specificity what needs to be done, both to get those filtration devices, to get them, make them mm-hmm. available, and to get them installed, and what needs to be done long-term to generate the financing needed to do the ultimate lead pipe replacement. And I talk about how to fund it. So please go to my website. I talk about everything from public safety to economic development to my strategy for capping property taxes and fees, and it's there, and the details are there.
Okay, now we only have, like, literally here, 10 seconds. Companion animals matter to you, otherwise you wouldn't get up so early to do this, and you and I wouldn't be talking offline so frequently about that issue. Again, really fast, just for time, why so important?
Well, look, perhaps because of my personal experience, growing up as a stutter and stammer, you know, changing schools like six or seven times, being an introvert, you know, I always became very close to my pets, because I had many pets, you know, and my wife, as you know, we lost our youngest son in February, yeah. Our dog Jax is just. My wife adores that dog, and I've seen firsthand. And there are studies that have talked about how animals can give people comfort, returning veterans,
absolutely.
The elderly, individuals who have faced many challenges, children in particular, particularly when children are given the responsibility for and trained and coached on how to properly care for animals. So it's really, really important. But what's really important, Steve, is that we create a mechanism to empower the community to set policy and to enforce policy to make Chicago a more humane city. If we institutionalize that, we don't have to pretend that we're experts, but we're not. But we've got to create vehicles for the experts to come together.
Well, Pete McMurray did a great interview with you just in the studio less than a month or so ago about the political issues. You could hear that interview at WGNRadio.com. Paul Vallis, thank you so much.
Thank you.